Chiron Return, and for the Pacifica Radio Network, welcome to Planet Waves FM. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your host, actually for about the next 45 minutes or so. Tonight's short edition is for Friday, July 10th, 2026. Welcome to our program, wherever you may be in the world, in the future, or in your state of mind. It is good to be with you. I am here with a short program tonight, most of which, because it looks long on the little player, is going to be a replay of my segment on Dell Bigtree and ICANN, Informed Consent Action Network, from last week. We had very low engagement last week due to the July 4th holiday, and this is a program that I want to make sure that everyone hears. It is, in a sense, a sign that my coverage of the 2020 crisis is reaching a culmination. I think this is this issue that I have kind of followed the thread to, not really stumbled upon. It kind of goes back to the original thesis of what I started doing, which was figuring out how exactly the COVID test is supposed to work. Remember the COVID test? It was like the most important thing in the world. Everybody had to subject themselves to getting a thing shoved 3 inches up their nose and then having that get put in a computer room. We're all supposed to bow down to it and have the most immense respect for the thing that was supposed to be the gold standard and all that, blah, 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 and stuff like that. Well, that's where I started, and it's kind of where I came back to, but then that evolved into a follow the money story. And though I go over some of this at the beginning of the Dell Bigtree segment, which will be after the song break, I want to go even more slowly and more specifically cover like exactly where I started and then exactly what I meant when I walked up to Dell Bigtree, I think it was on May 30th, and asked him if he had ever heard, if there was a novel pathogen in 2020, and he gave me this bullshit answer. He's in deep meditation on whether there was a novel pathogen in 2020. And then my follow-up question or my original question, depending on the situation, in this case was, how is it possible, and have you heard the fact that Christine Massey, that woman in Canada, our friend in Toronto, has received 224 or 225 responses from institutions, national institutions, major institutions, global institutions, whoever is subject to the Freedom of Information Law, Christine has written to. That means all of the major ones in the United States, National Institutes of Health and Allergy and Infectious Diseases and CDC and FDA and EPA and all of the like, and then all their equivalents throughout the Western world and in places where the things have to be translated into Arabic and stuff like that. And no one in the world, no institution in the world can produce a scientific paper now 6 years in establishing that this thing that they've called SARS-CoV-2, SARS-CoV-2, I don't know how they're supposed to pronounce it, has ever been found in a human being. And what I said to Bigtree was, he said, yeah, that's interesting. I said, isn't that the biggest story out of 2020? Like, wouldn't that be? They shut the world down. What basis did they have to do that? They, meaning starting with Italy, you know, Italy's health authorities, and then the CDC, and Trump declared an emergency on 3/13/20, and all the theaters were shut, and the schools, and the universities, and the offices, and everything pretty much, but the media and the journalists were sitting 25 feet apart on the set. And every concert and concert tour and festival and the entirety of Broadway, I mean, that just kills me. And no one today, after 5 years of filing these requests, she's probably done 1,000 of these FOIAs, Freedom of Information Law, Freedom of Information Act, depending whatever it's called in your country, Open Records Act requests for documents. And 99% of them come back, no records found. They have nothing to show that they ever had any reason, any of these health institutions, to actually believe on a scientific basis. In other words, somebody published a paper and found the thing that an actual novel virus, any contagion, any pathogen, SARS-CoV-2 itself existed. Now, you know, maybe that does not impress most people, but when I boil it down that way and say, like, okay, like, where does this, what does this whole story add up to, given the fact that they shut down the world for 4.4 billion people. This is the statistic. I didn't count them. I cannot count that high. But that's the statistic. More than half the world. Then something like two-thirds of the world population had a needle stuck in their arm to prevent this thing that had already allegedly gone around the year before. And then somehow they've got to put something like 8 billion injections into people. It's not, there's that many people, but most people who got the injection got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shots. The thing was the year before. People who had worked through the pandemic in 2020, like ambulance drivers, didn't get sick, were forced to get injected in 2021 or get fired. And after all that, no one can produce a paper that actually shows that a virus called SARS-CoV-2 was ever found in any person on Earth. Now, you probably have heard me talk about this a few times. I've had Christine Massey on the show. She's appeared on this program probably 8 times. I do my best to not shut up about her. I think this is the most astonishing fact in the history of the world. My particular slant as a journalist covering scientific fraud definitely amplifies the importance of this. There are things you could say were just as important, but, you know, I really can't think of one personally, given what was done. They didn't just say, you know, virus going around and like, la-di-da, everything's fine. They seized the planet. All these globalist authorities like the World Health Organization, intimately involved in the entire thing, sending out a fraudulent test to diagnose, quote-unquote, diagnose the virus, the Corman-Drosten test, a PCR protocol, completely dismantled as a fraudulent paper by about 25 scientists who conducted an independent peer review. People who were pro-virus at the time and anti-virus at the time and every possible shade of expert on the PCR said this whole protocol is fucked. There is nothing valid about it. That's called the retraction demand to Eurosurveillance by Peter Borger et al. I've had about six of those co-authors on the program. That thing is forgotten but not gone. So this is, I don't even know what to say. So here's where I'm going. The reason I am so fixated, in a sense, on what I have come to call the missing virus problem. This is my way, by the way, that phrasing is my way of being witty and sarcastic and understated. Oh, it's not that they just lied and shut down the entire world and shoved fake vaccines into the arms of, well, 8 billion of these little doses of some fucking mystery juice. And now they're wondering why all kinds of different things are happening, like why the cancer rate has exploded among millennials and the Gen Zs, the next generation after millennials, why the cancer rate has just exploded. Well, all we have to do is look to what is known about this mystery juice. That if you look on a website called OpenVares, which just reinterprets, it just presents the data from the Vaccine Adverse Events Response Database, VAERS, the official CDC reporting system for vaccine adverse events, there were more complaints, more reports filed in 2021 than all previous 30 years combined. And it's like, nobody says boo. Huh. About a million. Let's just get that up here. Open. I'm going to on speed dial. All VAERS reports, approximately 1.25 million reports to the Vaccine Adverse Events Response Database. Worldwide, you can file from anywhere. From the United States territories, U.S. territories, and unknown, that was in 2021, 752,980, a quarter of a million, just in the United States alone. Now, there's a Harvard study conducted for the CDC, which said, how many were we missing? How many, they want to know, how accurate is this thing? How many were we missing? And Harvard said, well, you're missing 99% of the adverse events. I'm not making this up. I don't like any of this. It's as hideous to me as it is to you. I'm just a little bit more accustomed to dealing with this information, with this kind of information, and seeing up close this kind of hideous behavior, not as a cynical expectation. Oh, of course that's how they are. Oh, well, it doesn't surprise me. Why not? No, that's not where I'm coming from. I'm a little kid. I'm a Pisces. I am a sensitive person. And this is maddening. And I think to say, oh, of course this is what they do, that's that kind of cynical response is to miss the entire point. So let's talk about this. They have, you have a million point two, let's just call it an even million. Well, that means that the VAERS system missed 99 million incidents. If it captured 1 million, and I'm sorry I have to throw numbers around, and the Harvard study says that you're missing 99%, you're only catching 1%, so that's 100 million injuries and deaths just coming into the VAERS system, just on that one statistical model. Doesn't count Russia, doesn't count a lot of other places. And then it And they're still spending billions on this shot, by the way. I found that out thanks to our old buddy Mary Holland at Children's Health Defense, who's trying to fundraise on the fact that some CDC gave money to Moderna and Pfizer or whatever. You wonder what the hell these things are. And nobody can find a virus. So this is why I ask these bigwigs who are pushing the virus, people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Lab Leak, people like Del Bigtree, people like Mary Holland. I'm going for the top. Shit rolls downhill. Now, I've done quite a few exposés on, admittedly, I was already on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at this point, but around New Year's 2023 to 24, you listen to some of those shows, they're hilarious. All the little twits with podcasts, everyone from James Corbett in Temperate Japan to Doc Malik to Whitney Webb, and this whole collection of people who we think somehow are legitimate journalists, sticking with us. They won't admit what is plainly, truthfully understood and known to be true, which is that no government, no health institution can produce a paper saying they actually found this damn thing. Now, why would these particularly, well, forget about Doc Malik and James Corbett and Temperate Japan and Whitney Webb. Why would these big machas not want to talk about this? Bigtree said he thought it was a big story, but I'm not covering it. I'm a journalist. I get to pick what I cover. Listen to that gas bag bullshit. I'll post that show. I haven't pulled all the actualities together, but I will post that show at the bottom of the Substack. I sent a letter out tonight obviously if you either got this on Substack or you're clicking through to Substack. And I actually didn't expect to write. I thought I was going to just kind of sum this up in a paragraph. Yeah, right. There's an event in American investigative journalism that I think about a lot, which is an article by Saul Stern, which came out in March of 1967. I need to check the astrology of that. And I've known about this article since I covered the United States student movement, and principally in New York, but I also covered the successor to the organization that Saul Stern wrote about as having been infiltrated by the CIA, which is the thing called the National Student Association. Don't confuse it with the other NSA. The National Student Association. That became the United States Student Association, which I covered. But it was reconstituted as the United States Student Association after Saul Stern published his landmark article in Ramparts delineating exactly how the National Student Association and numerous other organizations were infiltrated by phony foundations run by the CIA, injecting mucho dinero into their bank accounts and also giving them considerable clout. The one of the amazing things you read in this, and I've linked to the article in this article in Ramparts, is that these student leaders, going back to the 50s through the Cold War and then into the 60s, had unprecedented access to the corridors of power. But the entire thing was just was synthetic. It was made up by the CIA. And a lot of other things were involved. They abstract expressionism, Gloria Steinem. We've all heard that Gloria Steinem even admits that she was involved with the CIA. Well, how did that go down? Well, she met the students at the National Student Association. we're getting a lot of money. And so she approached them. So feminism she was the feminist leader from hell. You know, she was like, she was the big, heavy feminist leader. And the way this control worked and the way that these things became what we today casually bandy about, psychological operations, controlled opposition, limited hangouts, and all of that, was through this network of front operations. These front foundations pushing money around. And I had suspected that there was something like this going on in terms of why none of these top-tier people and then all the clowns that follow along with them for different reasons, why they just have to have this absurd posture about the existence of SARS-CoV-2. As far as I'm concerned, what's the big fucking deal? The way that I describe this to people when I'm trying to just describe it in plain talk is to say, look, you know, let's say... Mayor Smith is the mayor of Peabody, and he gets shot on Wednesday, and there's a funeral on Saturday. Oh, the fire department's there, everyone's saluting with their white gloves on, grieving widows and all that stuff, and the Boy Scouts come out. And then on Monday, everyone pretends that Mayor Smith is still alive, and they report on him like, and Mayor Smith held a press conference today. Wait a second. What happened to the shooting? What happened to the... He was very controversial. Guy, what happened to the shooting on Wednesday, the funeral on Saturday? Now you're saying he's back to life? That's what this seems like to me. It's this ridiculous. No. If you are one of these people who just like can't wrap your mind around the fact that there's a massive problem with the concept of a viral pathogen, okay, you're going to have a kind of a mental block here. And there's no discussing things with those people who just, you know, put their hand on their hip and say, well, you'll never convince me there's no such thing as a virus. It's like, well, someone sure did a good job of convincing you. On what grounds do you think that there is one? Right? On what grounds? Now, I believed in viruses. The only viruses I was really worried about were STIs, sexually transmitted infections, except for HIV. Because in 1992, I got so deep into the HIV story. This was right before the dioxin story took off in the fall of 92. That event happened in December of 91, the PCB explosion at SUNY New Paltz. And I did a big burst of work through early 92, wrong millennium. And then kind of took it easy over the summer. And then when school came back, I got back involved with the story. But before that happened over the summer, part of my concept of taking it easy was I sat in the library and I did research on this medical database, happened to be called ERIC. And it was in SUNY New Paltz Library. Anybody could go in and use it for free. I went in, went every day for a month, and I looked up every study in the mainstream medical journal press, you know, American Journal of Public Health, JAMA, and whatever, all of them. And after reading like 50 studies, by reading I mean print them out, staple them, put an index card on them, underline, annotate, it's one of my most important missing files, it became clear that there was a huge problem with the HIV story. And turns out other people were aware of that same problem and then like writing articles in Spin, which were kind of confusing the matter. They were doing this same thing. They were doing this diffuse deflect. Don't quite cop to the actual problem. I could do a whole segment on this without even looking at notes, but we'll skip it. But it was, for now, it was clear that the virus narrative had very serious issues. In 92, this is before anybody is, Celia's writing about it in Spin. She's 19 years old or something. I'm a little older than her. Oh, no, she was just, I think she's born in 65. So, I had some experience with this. In a sense, I was ready to resolve that question that had always been a question in my mind. How do none of these studies indicate the behavior of anything epidemiologically or in terms of medical etiology, right? The trend, the progression of disease and the transmission of disease. How does it not behave like they say virus is supposed to behave? Okay, so I had some preparation. I knew a little bit about the PCR. I knew a little bit about, not once I talked to Kevin Corbet, check him out in the chronology. I'll put a link to the chronology above. Look, Corbett. Look at his contribution. He did a whole PhD on this. People were figuring it out, but we're still, like, it's still like a very, very small group of people who are willing to embrace this. So let me cut to the chase here a little bit. I'm meandering slightly. When I keep walking up to these big machas, like Del Bigtree and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and they give me all this bullshit about lab leaks, or they pretend that Christine Massey doesn't exist, and then they're on the lab leak thing. They're all like lab leak. It hit me that, like, okay, this is not an effect without a cause. And so when I got back from Rhode Island a few weeks ago, I sat down at my kitchen table and opened up my laptop, which I was still, my work was still centered on, and I started doing searches, and I started finding out that there are these things called donor-advised funds. And the donor-advised funds are associated with funds heavily invested in vaccine manufacturers. Pfizer, Moderna, Gilead. Bigtree's money comes from the family. Initially, his initial money came from the family that was invested in the company that developed remdesivir, which was what was used to kill COVID, quote-unquote COVID patients in 2020 and 2021. It causes pulmonary edema. It's a drug that makes people's lungs fill up with water, and you stop giving them the drug, and the water level goes down, and you give them the drug, and then eventually they drown from remdesivir. The backer, Del Bigtree's initial backer, the Cells Foundation, was the Cells family was heavily invested in Gilead Pharmaceutical. Gilead Pharmaceutical, also the company that makes all these PrEP drugs. People are essentially taking what amount to chemotherapy drugs to prevent HIV infection. This is the craziest freaking thing in the world. And so it was like Kerplunk. Remember that game where you pull out one too many little plastic spines and all the marbles come out? Well, I had my Kerplunk moment on that Sunday night. And of course, I immediately wrote to that woman in Canada. That woman in Canada went to the ProPublica website and found all of the 990s, which start to map out the flowing of the money. So this position of always going to the lab leak, always trying to pretend that Christine Massey and Mark and Sam Bailey don't exist, and you pay a little homage to Tom Cowling Hudson across the river, and Del Bigtree, gas bag, said, "Why don't you get together with Tom Cowan and Andy Kaufman and form a lab and do some science?" Del Bigtree never fucking held a test tube in his life. He's a TV producer. He's a movie producer. I should go do science like I do. Yeah, no. No, Del, put a sock in it. Now, this turns out to be a massive dark money network. And the purpose of the dark money network, it would seem that the effect, right? The effect is the intent. Eric McLuhan. The effect is the intent. That the effect is to hold the line on the whole matter of virus existence, to make people seem like crazy nutjobs if they are going to even raise the question of virus existence, of any virus, of SARS-CoV-2, of whatever. And there are some rather, let's just say, unfriendly, vitriolic people on this issue. But mostly, the plebs, the peanut gallery, is taking the position that, well, you know, Dell understands that it's not time yet, you know, that the people are not really ready yet and all that. I don't meet people at these conferences who think that SARS-CoV-2 was real. Everyone freaking knows this issue exists. But these guys on top, they're all lab leak, lab leak, lab leak. Well, if there was a lab leak, then that if a virus got out of a lab and it was so deadly that it only killed frail old people, which it didn't kill them because it didn't exist, well, why wasn't that found? This is such cognitive dissonance. It is ridiculous. But it is being stoked. It is a setup. And as far as I can tell, the setup works like this. Make sure that enough people are paid off to hold the line and claim that there are viruses. Therefore, there is a need for vaccines. Therefore, lots of people get injected with these vaccines, which they're not vaccines, which seem to do nothing but instigate chronic illness and death, which keeps the medical industry going. If it's true that the COVID shots resulted, which it is true, in a million reports to the VAERS database, and that only catches 1% of the reports, so that actually comes out to 100 million. 40,000 deaths acknowledged in the United States. That's 4 million deaths. 40,000 deaths acknowledged by the CDC from the SARS-CoV-2 shot. By far, the deadliest vaccine ever created. You can't think this is some kind of an accident, and you can't think that they didn't know that there wasn't a virus. If SARS-CoV-2 didn't exist, if it was all just a bunch of metagenomic transcripts, I forgot to say that. It's all a bunch of computer models. That's all they've got when they say, no, we don't have any sample from a person. It's just we have computer models called metagenomic transcripts. Well, this should be a topic of conversation. No, lab leak. Okay, therefore, we need safe vaccines. Therefore, people take the shots. There's no safe vaccines. Kennedy himself admits that there's no way to actually test the safety of a vaccine. I saw him at a presentation where he said, everyone knows, and they told Reagan before he signed the 1986 Act, Childhood Vaccine Safety Act, that there's no way to test the safety. So they made the VAERS system to collect reports of people who had dropped dead and gotten sick from the thing. And my contention is that this whole position of blanking and gaslighting people on this, even the question of virus existence, is basically bought and paid for. And that the purpose that serves is to make sure that people still have anxiety about viruses, hence they still get injected, hence they get sick from the injections, hence the same companies that make the vaccines continue to haul in billions on all of their drugs. I wish I could say this was a conspiracy theory. It just seems to be a sussing out of the business plan. Now, like Saul Stern, who was paid by an established magazine, the way that I got to this position, to this understanding, was journalism, the practice of objective, not politically biased, free to do whatever I discovered, free to say whatever I learned. And many of you listened week after week as I figured out the PCR and slowly wrapped my mind around that. And like any invention, you don't have to reinvent it. My work is there to track. And, well, it actually turns out that I figured out what was already well known about the PCR, that it doesn't it can't test for a virus, even if there is such a thing as a virus. It took me 6 years to get where I am today. I started March 3rd, 2020. So 6.5 years. My 6 year anniversary was March 3rd. Journalism takes time, patience, resources, risk. I have to not do other things that I could do to support myself, or I support my journalism doing astrology readings. People just make donations based on my doing astrology readings for them. And I run an organization. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small, called Chiron Return, that has done a spectacular job of documenting a number of things, from our chemical library, our chemical document library of 100,000 documents that we were able to get into multiple university libraries and document cloud, to the COVID chronology, running a daily news aggregation blog every single day for 1,185 days. Covering East Palestine. My understanding is that my journalism on dioxin, because I was the only person covering dioxin, resulted in dioxin tests in East Palestine. And J.D. Vance was the contact point. I got it to somebody who got it into the AP, and then the senators from Ohio saw that. One of them was Vance, and Vance and his colleague demanded dioxin testing. It's on the Ohio border. My intent is to continue doing this story on the funding sources, on how the entire, with the exception of local grassroots organizations and some religious organizations, the anti-vaccine movement is a scam. I am here to finish the COVID chronology. Apparently, this is the only thing of its kind. I have the work researched out to the end of 2023. We leave off the COVID daily COVID coverage with AI, interestingly. There needs to be an AI chronology. So I am the kind of editor who can manage six investigations. I have this odd capacity to be able to keep a lot of shit straight in my head and to be able to work with people at different levels of proficiency and different, completely different skill sets might be involved in some of these projects. And so I'm here today asking for your support. I'm also here to thank the people who have made donations over the past month, that they have kind of seen me spring back into action as a Buckaroo Bonsai investigative journalist, walking right up to Del Bigtree, apparently the only person in the world either who knew what to ask or who had the chutzpah, same with Kennedy. And I'm here to invite you to join me in this vision of what I will humbly call legitimate journalism. Journalism that is not, you know, pre-established outcomes based on being paid for by Fidelity and Vanguard. This is not really journalism. Journalism that is not politically partisan, that is not beholden to anyone for, again, a pre-established outcome of any kind, that can actually get the work done. And so a while ago, coming on about 12 years ago, I took my vision for journalism and founded that into a nonprofit organization called Chiron Return. Chiron Return is therefore in the position to receive donations. I'm allowed to solicit donations from the public by law. That all has to be worked out and, you know, the registration's filed and all of that. And to receive donations from places like charitable family trusts. And there are a diversity of projects, but I think that the mother of all investigations is always a chronology. Fortunately, other people, well, I did my own chronology of the PCB story, and then other, there were multiple chronologies because I was dealing with top-end litigators who were suing Monsanto, General Electric, etc. The chronology is always the progenitor of the amazing journalism. And so the best thing of all about Chiron Return is that the purpose of the organization is to teach journalism through doing journalism. And therefore, I would, there are not a lot of people who are going to work for free these days. I understand that. But they would get some stipend or some pay per hour or something per job or for the project. And by the way, this was very important during the COVID chronology and the COVID. I didn't get paid. I probably donated 1,000 hours to that. But, Allison, my assiduous proofreader, had to go through the entire thing with a fine-tooth comb. And there were people paid to be news editors, news aggregators, but all based on the donations to Chiron Return. So I would like to set up this kind of chronology factory, this chronology mill, and with that have a web apparatus that is able to kind of self-aggregate the chronologies where the details can be put in and where they appear in real time on the web, accessible to all, and then processed into other forms. That's back to journalism shop. The result is that we would know what happened. We would have a context. Out of these projects will come many stories. The AI issue is at this extreme crux point now. I still follow several presenters. I've definitely in the past year separated the wheat from the chaff, so to say, and have gotten down to the presenters who really understand the issues. Some of them are doomers and some of them are boomers and some of them are just taking realistic purposes, but they're the people that I have in my editorial judgment assessed. And so what I'm saying here is I've got an agenda, and there's no limit to what I can accomplish if I have the funding to accomplish it. And unlike a lot of all the other organizations, many of the other organizations you know of that I've been talking about tonight, my funding comes from you. You are where I can go. There's nowhere else for me to really go. And I know that there are people listening to my voice right now who genuinely have faith, not only in my talent, but in my commitment to truth, in my, I would say, verging on incorruptible status. I think I dread to think what it would take to in some way compromise me. But I've been at this since I was 19 years old, and quite frankly, nobody's even tried. No one even bothers. They can say things. And, nah. So, I invite you, reach out, please. Click on the medallion. Send a little in. If you've been listening to this show for years, you will feel good to give something back to all this work and reassurance and my ability to coordinate these lovely people and join you each Friday night and tell it like it is, to tell you what I have learned each week. Okay, we're going to have a long song break. Grateful Dead favorite. I am backing down, backing off on work for the past, for the next, not past, next couple of weeks. This is, I'm not sure what date this is, but all right. Thanks for joining me. The Del Big Tree segment is next. Signing off from the Harshaw House. Lots of love, and bye for now.
The captain, strangest I could find, laying my proposition down, lady of the line. I won't stay for Vegas pay, likewise. I want to slave to learn the way.
of the things in the Constitution that is there to address the problem created by, for example, the government ruling in favor of a corporation that is poisoning people is the First Amendment. And the First Amendment gives the right of the press to operate freely, the right of people to practice their religion, and the right to petition the government for the redress of grievances by any peaceful method. In the United States, there are two main organizations that claim to be in the lead of the movement against vaccines. You might say, why is that? If you're wondering why anyone might be against vaccines, phrase your question and I will respond to it. And we're going to get to it a bit in this segment. One of them is Del Bigtree, who hosts a program called The High Wire and who has an organization called the Informed Consent Action Network. Another is called Children's Health Defense, or CHD, and that is where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was the kind of big name, celebrity leader of that organization for 6 or 7 years. He kind of built it up out of nothing and then ran for president and then was named Secretary of Health and Human Services. Bigtree and Kennedy are very close. To give you an example, Bigtree worked on Kennedy's presidential campaign and in addition is the source of the term MAHA, Make America Healthy Again. And so they're the big names on the so-called anti-vaccine scene. Vaccines are almost all based on the theory that there are communicable viruses and bacteria that can be passed from person to person and cause disease. This theory has never been shown to be true. I am not saying that as some kind of a rhetorical exercise or word game. I am saying that you will never find, and you are welcome to, if you can find a transmission study that shows that there is proven transmission of a bacterium or a virus, please present me the paper and come on the program and tell us about it. In 2020, the claim was made that there was a virus on the loose and that the entire world had to be first shut down, people locked in their homes or told to stay home or locked out of their offices, their schools, their campuses, their jobs, their Broadway theaters and everything else to prevent the spread of this virus. And 4.4 billion people, from what I've read, number among those who were forced to stay home. Second, in December 2020, a so-called vaccine campaign was begun to inoculate the world against this thing. And something like two-thirds of the planet took the shot. I've lost track of that number. An astoundingly high number of people succumbed to the fear and took the shot. And they largely succumbed to the fear based on repeated television, TV shows, basically, and internet articles and the worldometer with the little odometer spinning faster and faster and faster and faster and showing that, more people were dying every minute than you could shake a stick at, and the number of infections rising and all of this stuff. And when all of that ended, while it was in the midst of going on, people started inquiring about the proof that this virus existed. And you could say, well, why do you need proof? All these people are dying. I don't know. Maybe they're dying from something else. Maybe, you know, you don't know what's killing someone until you do the postmortem examination. You never, ever know, unless somebody's like flung from a motorcycle and lands 30 feet, well, you know, hits a rock and lands, and then you have an idea. But unless it's really obvious like that, you don't know why. You don't know the actual cause of death until you do what's called a postmortem, an autopsy. So people started looking into whether and how it was known that this virus existed. And what they started to find was that the papers claiming that a virus existed, the Wu paper and the Ren paper and the Zhu paper and the Zhao paper and then all the ones that followed, all these papers, didn't actually show that a virus existed or had been proven to be contagious and harmful, but rather that something claimed to be a virus had been filed with various different websites, but it was only a computer model. The very nucleus of my story, my assignment, we'll call it an assignment, for covering COVID, was to understand the nature of the COVID test, the nose swab test, which is not really a test, and that nature includes that this is a molecular test looking for a specific molecule said to come from a virus. What is the source of the thing being looked for? It's called the amplicon or the primers. What is the thing being sought? If they're going to look for 33 base pairs of some molecule said to come from a virus, where did they get that? And I and others have figured out that that came from a computer model, did not come from a person. By the way, the past two full shows of Planet Waves FM have dealt with this issue in detail. If you're interested, they're there, right at Planet Waves FM, planetwaves.fm, and also if you look on the Substack, planetwavesfm.substack.com. One involved Robert F. Kennedy, one involved Del Bigtree, who we're going to hear from in a minute. Okay, so it starts to become obvious that nobody had any proof of a virus, and if nobody had any proof of a virus, then on what grounds did they shut down the world? On what grounds did they force everyone to take vaccines or fire them? This is serious business, if you remember. It was 5 years ago, but still, it's horrifying to project myself back in time. The people who lost their jobs and therefore lost their homes because they lost their jobs, all because they refused to take this shot. Well, what was the shot based on? If no virus had been found in a person, it had never been proved to make somebody sick, all they had was a computer model that was never shown to come from a virus, match a virus, be contagious, or cause disease, what was the shot based on? And this is one facet of the question of quote-unquote virus existence. That's a byword. What I call this is the missing virus problem. And there are people who like to expand the issue into other things that it doesn't include, such as, well, if there's no virus, why did everyone get sick? Well, you need to go one at a time and find out, first of all, did they get sick? What were they already sick with? What were they sick with last year? What did they do right before they got sick? And I think most significantly, were they actually sick? Okay, what killed all those people? Well, that's easy. Everyone dies. Something kills you. And what you don't know what it was until you read the medical chart and conduct a postmortem. And you think, oh, God, you're getting picky. Well, I'm not getting that picky because I'm concerned that basically half the world was shut down, like the entire Northern Hemisphere was, and a chunk of the Southern Hemisphere, like if you count New Zealand and Australia, South Africa, and no one can point to the culprit. No one can point to the motive. No one, you can say, well, they were killed by a virus. Oh, but the virus is theoretical. We don't have the virus, but we're just saying that it was a virus. Well, that sounds like, well, yeah, you know, you know, it sounds like a good excuse for murder. Like, well, oh, it was a demon that killed the person, which is kind of what a virus is. But usually the virus is a form of toxins like Roundup. At Love Canal, they were saying the people were getting sick from the flu, when in fact they were getting sick from 23,000 tons of chemical waste and nuclear waste sitting in the ground. They did not have a virus. They were actually being poisoned. But the state health department said, oh, that's a virus. You got a virus. Well, so when if you're wondering why it is that I am so concerned about this issue, it is because it is my position, and I think a level-headed, fact-based, investigation-based position, that the single biggest story out of 2020 is the fact that the world was shut down as if there was some massive emergency, not a potential emergency, but an actual one. And then this was further used as an excuse to put billions of injections into people's arms, which further made people sick. And once I finished with that kind of, let's say, part of the story of understanding the nature of the test and the nature of the amplicon and the matter of the existence of SARS-CoV-2, I turned my attention to people who were not telling people the truth about this, but rather were making up stories about things like lab leaks, or who would attempt to explain the PCR, but only using the cycle threshold and not the how many times they would run the cycle to manufacture molecules to prove that there was a virus, and not the fundamental core issue of what were they looking for? How do they know what to look for? What were they looking for? And one of the people that I have been pursuing has been Del Bigtree and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., his best friend. 3 weeks ago or so at a conference, what was it? Yeah, it was about a month ago. At a conference in Rhode Island, I had a little mini press gaggle with Del Bigtree, and he spoke to me for 8 minutes. We heard that recording 3 weeks ago. And I asked him, you know, about this little problem of, like, why are you not, I know he knows that the virus was never found. I know largely because he said on May 8th, 2020, there's no proof that this even exists. And then he slowly started to change his tune, and he slowly started to pretend that it was the lab leak, because it's a good story to sell. It's very exciting. It's very intriguing. And it drags people in. It's involving. And he admits himself that, well, I can't really sell the missing virus story. I've got to sell the lab leak. I've got to communicate with these people about it. I got to tell them something. So, true, false, whatever. I'm going to tell them something that they can latch on to because they trust me and they'll go along with it. Well, okay. All right. So then a week ago, he was at another event. And I went to that event. In neither instance did I plan to speak with him. But I did both times. And we spoke a week ago for 18 and a half minutes. I think that he heard what I said about his initial presentation on the program from 3 weeks ago, and he felt maybe that it would be a good idea to kind of have a second chance to, pardon me. Bigtree, you're choking me, to have a second chance to make his case. So I asked him a couple of questions. And we were talking in a cow barn. We're talking actual barn where cow, there was only one calf in the front of the barn. Let me play for you the first of those. So what I've done is, it's 18 minutes. I've selected 4 minutes, which is long. I get it. Another 4 minutes, and then 2 minutes. So I'm going to, for the rest of this segment, I'm going to play those quotations from the conversation. Then I'm going to respond and tell you what I think is going on. And I begin by asking him about donor-advised funds which support his organization, where the for-profit part of those donor-advised funds has massive investments in Pfizer and Moderna, manufacturers of vaccines. And how is it possible that the Informed Consent Action Network is accepting millions of dollars from these DAFs, donor-advised funds, associated with Fidelity and Vanguard, when those companies are invested in Moderna and Pfizer? Okay? Are you following this? I'm not screaming about this. I'm intending to speak softly about this. But this is a very serious business. Okay, here we go. Here is me catching up with, a little out of breath at first, with Del Bigtree in the barn, in the farm in Hudson, New York.
I'd like to talk about donor-advised funds.
Donor-advised.
Coming from Fidelity and Vanguard into ICANN.
Okay.
Where's that money coming from?
That's private. I don't share my donors' information.
Isn't it true that he who pays the piper calls the tune?
I suppose it depends on who the piper is and what the tune is.
Right. But I believe even your 990s don't reflect that you take money from DAFs. You have to go to the DAFs themselves to find out that money is...
I think that's probably true for most nonprofits. I mean, I'd be shocked to see there's a nonprofit that doesn't use donor-advised funds, especially nonprofits that find themselves censored, that have attacks on the work that we do. If you're doing work that is not appreciated by the media system around you or the government around you, then shouldn't we have an ability to have people donate to important works and not themselves come under attack? I'm willing to take on the attack, and that doesn't mean everyone that wants to sponsor me should have to take on that risk.
So Fidelity and Vanguard's for-profit arms are invested in Pfizer and Moderna. To me, that would be too close for comfort.
Well, I'll answer that the same way I think Bobby Kennedy always answers that. You know, he said, I'll take money from Exxon if they'll help me fund cleaning up the environment.
Can you see the flaw in that? I mean, it sounds good.
The only flaw that exists is if the person saying it is not a trustworthy human being. But in the, you know, in a world that we're in, certainly we should, you know, we should be concerned about, you know, does money influence things? And to that, I can only speak to my track record, which I realize the things that you care about, you seem to think that I'm not delivering the message you would want. But most of the people that support me and like my work do like the work that we're getting done.
No, it's not so much a message as it is honoring core science.
I think we would probably argue over what that term even means.
It would mean science. When you talk about the PCR, you talk about the amplicon. You don't talk about the cycle threshold. You say what the PCR is actually looking for.
That's not true. I talk about the cycle threshold ad nauseum.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think that's very much secondary to the amplicon.
Well, I mean,
primers. What are the primers, right? What is it looking for?
I'm glad you're here, but I don't feel like you're a person that actually listens, is my experience of our interactions so far. I think you have an agenda, which is cool, so do I. But my agenda is communication. My agenda is waking up as many people as I can to the fact that there's many attributes in their life that are about to be out of their own control. And if they don't stand up and do something about it, we're all going to be living in a prison colony system around the world.
Well, that would
and
be
so
the,
I'm attempting to stop that.
That would be the issues, digital ID, right?
That'll be digital ID. That'll be AI. That will be forced injections, you know, whether you believe in the viruses, bacteria they're advertising or not. We need to stop the ability for world governments to inject us with things we have no control over.
It would
over.
Seem that raising the virus issue would be a very good way to...
I haven't found that that's true. I think it's a loser in waking people up. I think it's a great conversation for people that are already awake. Super fascinating. but I haven't seen it open any doors. I certainly haven't seen it win any lawsuits.
Okay, let's take this in reverse. But I would note right up here, right up front here, that when I said, why aren't you talking about the thing the PCR is looking for? You're only talking about the cycle threshold. And he says, yeah, yeah, talk about the cycle threshold. I said, well, you're not talking about the Amplicon. And what does he do? He says, Eric, I'm glad you're here, but, you know, you've got some kind of an agenda, and you're not a very good listener. I mean, I've heard this so many times from people like this. Usually they're wearing a suit. But you're just, I'm not saying the things that you want me to say, but our track record proves that we get results. Now, no, we're going to get into that in the next one. They've won one lawsuit on religious freedom. It has nothing to do with any of these things, the religious exemption. He further says that he brings the issue around to world governance control. And I know what he's talking about. He's talking about Agenda 2030. And right now what Dell is doing is fundraising on Agenda 2030. Now, when he says we've only got 3 to 5 years left before we're all going to be living in this open air concentration camp, and we're going to be, you know, living in this prison and all this stuff, and not going to have any control over what's injected into our bodies. And I say, yeah, well, that comes down to two things. It comes down to these investment funds that run everything and are buying up everything around the world, and it comes down to the virus issue. Because if people understood that there's this missing virus problem, that would start to unravel all of the mandates for vaccines. He doesn't want to go there because I'm a bad listener and I've got my own agenda. And he says... I love how he turned it around and tried to blame it on me. It's just too funny. And I wish I had a collection of all the little condescending twits who do that. A bad listener. That the missing virus is a loser. It loses in court, and he wins in court. Add the little Donald Trump hand gesture, the little hand, like the little jazz hand sticking out, his little fingers. He wins in court, and that loses in court. Well, in the previous discussion, if you recall, I said, well, Stefan Lanka won in Germany on the measles. He said it loses in court. And I said, no, it won in court in Germany. And then the first time around, he brushed that off as irrelevant. The second time, I couldn't wedge it into the conversation. But he knows that issue can win in court, and that it did. And he's like, nah, well, no, we're not going there, because I got to communicate with people somehow. And what he's kind of saying is, it's easier for people to believe this lie that I'm telling them than it is to believe the truth. Now, this is pretty lame. And especially when he talks about, you know, his answer to my commentary that whoever pays the piper calls the tune. And he says, well, that depends on the piper and the tune, and if somebody is a trustworthy human being. And it depends on their track record. Well, what track record can he claim? He's won one lawsuit that was not a FOIA, a federal, state, or local Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. One. I'm going to get to that in a second. We'll see. I think he talks about it. Well, I will. Where have I got that? I will come back around to that. Let me put that on a list of things to conclude with. Is the Mississippi religious exemption. One state, one cheap lawsuit in 2024 that he won in 2024. So there is no track record except for this one minor lawsuit in one state, and the rest is FOIA, is documents. Well, Christine Massey's got 1,000 of these that she's done. It didn't cost anybody any money. It cost, you know, rice and beans. to feed her. I don't know what she eats, but I assume it's something like, you know, salads and that kind of a thing. She doesn't need any $15 million a year. And my contention is that the reason that ICANN is so ineffectual, the reason why they have to, he has to claim, well, we won a lawsuit, and it was in Mississippi over the religious exemption, and that's all he can say, is got something to do with the money that they're getting from these anonymous donor-advised funds run by Vanguard and Fidelity, who are invested in the vaccine manufacturers. To understand the output, you've got to look at the input. And if the input is this kind of money coming through these dark money sources from anonymous donors, well, maybe that's why the output is so ridiculously ineffectual. Maybe that's why none of this stuff that they're doing actually matters, but they can make it seem like it matters, and it sounds good. And I'm absolutely going to critique this Mississippi case. I understand what happened in Mississippi. I went and looked it up. Okay. Then, last but not least, he talks about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Saying he would accept money from Exxon if it would help him clean up the environment. Well, what do we get in Robert F. Kennedy? Do we have an effective voice for, you know, progress, for safety? Do we have anyone delivering a consistent message in his buddy Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? And that is covered in the second recording. And I'm eating my words a little bit here, but what I'm asking him about is, first of all, I believe I begin with Lanka. We're continuing off kind of where that one left off. And then I say, didn't you produce the Vaxxed films, V-A-X-X-E-D, films about the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella, which in my opinion, not my Twitter guy in bed opinion, but my studied opinion, is crib death in a shot. Here you go.
But I haven't seen it open any doors. I certainly haven't seen it win any lawsuits, which I have done. You know, I have won freedom for people in Mississippi, and I do not believe the terrain theory argument is capable of doing that. And so I'm going to continue sticking with arguments that win us more freedom and get into our hands. Mississippi won back the religious exemption from vaccines for every child that wants
seems
to use
have
it
nothing to do with the virus. That can be argued without the virus issue easily. Make
then
a choice.
Go, then,
God takes care of me. God takes care of me.
Look, all I can do is point to my successes, and I use the language that works for me.
Right. MMR, Vax films are covered the MMR significantly, right? That starts with the Vax first Vax film, right? Is that right?
What do you, I don't know what you're
the
asking
The MMR
me.
Vaccine in the first Vaxed film. Vaxed,
yes.
That was about the MMR, right?
Yes,
the woman who had the two
was.
Children, one was two, or one was injected
yeah.
twice, one... How can you support Robert F. Kennedy if he, on the first day in office, basically supports the MMR? I don't get that. That completely blew my mind.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to understand. I don't love it. And I might not do things exactly like Bobby's doing them, but I do know him. And I know that for him, he believes that every day he survives in D.C., he can get more work done. He is not a type of person that is, you know, an absolutist. He is not going to, you know, crucify himself over one issue and let go of 20 he thinks he can still change. And so I think he makes compromises that are being demanded upon him that I also do not appreciate, and I've spoken out against him when he's made those statements. But I know one thing you'll never hear me say is that he's turned on us. I don't believe that that's the case. I think he is making deals and walking a tightrope none of us are on, surrounded by sharks none of us are dealing with, and he's doing the best that he can to bring the most amount of change he can. But I would also say, anyone that thinks that anyone can go into government and make sweeping changes that would make us all happy, then you just don't understand the system.
I wasn't expecting sweeping changes. I just wasn't expecting an saying the MMR saves lives.
Yeah.
That seems
neither
to be
was
like
I.
That could negate the work of 10 ICANNs and 10 CHDs just because it's going to get picked up by every media outlet and every web page. And
yeah, but only listened to by the people that are listening to media outlets that have been saying that all along. I don't think it changes things, but I would agree with you. It's not a statement I can ever imagine I would have made if I had that job.
After producing the Vaxxed films?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can't imagine I would ever make that statement.
I can't imagine it either.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
It was astounding, and it seemed to me like a hazing more than anything else.
Of him?
Yeah. It seemed to me like you're Mr. CHD, you're going to go out there and you're going to endorse the worst of the I think the vaccines are in order of the worst, COVID, and then MMR, death and a shot.
First of all, I sort of agree with you. I think in some ways you could describe it as that. I think Bobby is being, you said hazing, certainly tested on a major level, an allegiance, loyalties of things that are dark, misinformed. And like I said, I think he is making a calculated decision to say, I don't like this, but if I do it, I can at least continue fixing the food supply. He is attempting to cut the vaccine program in half. That's not enough for me. None of these vaccines should be mandated, but certainly cutting in half is going to make a lot more children healthier than they would have been. So, I would agree with you that I think I am too much of a purist to take the role he just took. And by the way,
a purist. Mm-hmm. So let me recap that. What I said, the whole discussion was about Robert F. Kennedy. And I narrowed it down to the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine because while RFK was the head of Children's Health Defense, he was outspoken against the MMR vaccine, and Del Bigtree rose to fame producing a film called Vaxxed. Do not, smoke weed before you watch this. Sit at the kitchen table. Do not drink any alcohol. It is horrifying. And the film demonstrates how devastating the MMR shot is. And then, the minute he's in office in Washington, meaning Kennedy, as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, he flies down to Texas or someplace to go to the funeral of a kid who died allegedly of the measles. That's a complicated story. And by the way, the measles is never said to be a deadly disease. But anyway, he goes down there and he talks about how the MMR saves lives. Well, how big of a betrayal can you have? And here he's saying, well, I'm too much of a purist to say something like that. You don't need to be a purist. This is like the fire chief being caught, dousing the supermarket with gasoline and lighting it on fire. There is no bigger contradiction than the head of Children's Health Defense advocating the MMR vaccine and then Del Bigtree not roundly condemning him for it and saying that this is a complete betrayal. What he's saying is not true. I know from the work that I have done as a film producer and as the head of the Informed Consent Action Network advocating for people who have been poisoned by these injections, this is outrageous. No, he's like, well, we might be a little bit different than Robert F. Kennedy. Well, he's a kind of a political animal and he has to do the things, he's got to do what he's got to do. He's in Washington, D.C. And, when you're swimming with the sharks, you have to bite and you have to when you're in that political environment, you have to make compromises, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's a bunch of excuse making. If he were truthful, he would say, that was the most insane thing I'd ever heard a person do. I can't even believe that he was getting up there, standing up on the stump and advocating at this funeral. And not only that, all those articles said that he was formerly the head of Children's Health Defense. And then he's saying he's in favor of the MMR. This is very, very bad look. There is no way these organizations are legitimate. Yeah, it's true that people, they go from you know, they go from like the press into industry. You know, some guy reporting on chemicals for some of the new Washington Post or something, you know, might join Monsanto as a public relations man. That is a complete betrayal of the truth. And what they're ultimately saying is that, well, we just got to get by, and it's really only the money that matters. All right. This was the section where he talked about winning the freedom of the people in Missouri to have the religious exemption, which has been removed in nearly all states. So I looked into this, and this is his one legal victory besides getting documents under the Freedom of Information Law. Okay, one. This organization is pumping from $15 to $25 million a year. It has taken up a lot of oxygen and a lot of space, and it's setting the terms on what is acceptable for both the virus discussion and the vaccine discussion. Now let's talk about Mississippi. It is true that a federal judge in Mississippi ordered the state health department to reestablish a religious exemption process for people who, for religious or philosophical purposes, do not want to take vaccines. There are plenty of religions, like the Seventh-day Adventists are one of them. There are many religions who completely disavow medicine. The Amish, to some extent, do this. Mennonites, to some extent, do this. But there are ones, I know the Adventists are like, and then Christian Scientists, they don't go to the doctor. Okay, so therefore, this exemption should exist, and it is a First Amendment issue, and I don't think you should have to prove anything. But he says they won this back. So what happens? So they bring the lawsuit in Mississippi, and the judge says, well, so actually, there's the Mississippi Religious Freedom Reform Act already on the books, and that was supposed to do the job of the religious exemption. It's called RFRA in federal. I hadn't heard that in a long time. RFRA, R-F-R-A. And then this is MIRFRA, Mississippi Religious Freedom Reform Act. And that was supposed to allow this. You know, well, I've got religious freedom, so I don't want to take your vaccine because God protects me, okay? God protects me from your imaginary virus or the real virus. I don't care. I'm fine. But they weren't accepting that. So the judge said, yeah, you guys are right. You know, Big Tree didn't do any work. They hired a law firm. And it's a First Amendment case. It's a religious freedom case. There's no expert witnesses, you know, to rack up millions and millions of dollars. This is purely a case of our arguing motions. There's no trial. They're just filing a few motions. And the court said, yeah, that they should have the right to have religious exemption from vaccines. And I hereby order the health department to set up that process. And then Big Tree claims the win, and that's his one thing that he can point to. I get victories. Well, they got one victory. Then the rest is the freedom of information stuff, which Christine Massey does for the price of tea and biscuits. So this is ridiculous. And if there's going to be not for nothing, I spent a lot of time around activist organizations, you know, covering activist organizations and the student movement and all this stuff, and various things, hanging around NYPERG and the U.S. Student Association and State University, SASU, the student movement lobby, and the other things. And there's all kinds of national campaigns to do things like this. What he should be doing with $15 to $25 million a year is running a national campaign to bring back the religious exemption. This would be a very popular issue, I think. I think people who even believe in vaccines would, a lot of them would get on board with this. It could be argued as just pure patriotism. What were the founders talking about when they said that you have religious freedom? You have the right to have bodily autonomy if you feel that God will keep you healthy. Okay. No, They're not doing anything. He's resting on his laurels. The state didn't even appeal the decision. It was kind of a setup. It was to me, it seemed like a, yeah, we know that we've got like an administration in office that's not, they're not going to appeal it. The attorney general is a holy roller or whatever. I don't know what the specifics were, but it read to me like they knew they were going to get no resistance, that Mississippi in the Deep South was a kind of a soft target for this kind of a lawsuit, and the attorney general didn't even appeal. And that's it. Look, it's lovely, but there's like 45 other states that don't have the religious exemption. They're not going to get this up into the circuit courts until they have conflicting issues in different circuits. Why aren't they networking with other local organizations to bring religious freedom exemptions to the vaccines? So that's really disingenuous for him to claim that, you know, well, goody goody for Stefan Lanka for winning in the German courts and proving that the measles virus doesn't exist. We're the real heroes. We got the religious exemption in reapplied in Mississippi, which, you know, has like 1/100th the population of the entire country. But I gotta say, the conversation gets even worse from here, and I have saved the best for last. Oh, wait, one last PS. He says, I can't believe I did. I buried the lead again. He says, oh, God. Oh, hold on. Let me try to pull myself together. He's like, well, I said, doesn't he who pays the piper call the tune? And he says, yeah, it depends on the piper and depends on the tune. I believe in what Robert F. Kennedy said, that if I could take money from Exxon to clean up the environment, I would. Well, so Robert F. Kennedy took the money from the vaccine, from Pfizer and Moderna, and then he winds up in Washington, and yeah, some cleanup job. He then turns around and endorses the very vaccine that his organization had spent the last 7 years fighting against. He was also involved in the Vaxxed series of films and endorsed them many times and all of that. So that's what you get when you're taking money from Exxon to clean up the environment. Well, what do you do? You like drop a bottle of oil in aisle six, and the kid comes with the mop and mops it up, and you say, look, we are cleaning up oil spills. When it's like Mazola corn oil in aisle six. All right, let's go to Exxon, Amplicon. Okay, Dancing with the Devil. This is called the Dance with the Devil quote. This is a little shorter. It's 2 minutes, so we'll both be able to stay awake. Here you go.
You know, I'm a pathological optimist, but my optimism is being tested by seeing how far down the road. I think this is all really a globalist. I think what I'm realizing is, I don't even think vaccines is my major issue anymore. I think it's always been the tip of a spear, but what I am is an anti-globalist. And so whatever argument I need to make, whoever's standing in front of me to get you to say, I don't want to have a global governance system, then I'm going to use that argument. And it changes depending on the room I'm standing in. But the one thing I'm true about is I want America, I want my government closer. I'm becoming more, I think, of a libertarian, I suppose, though I won't say I've studied it enough to fully understand it, coming from having been a liberal my whole life. But the idea of bringing government closer to me makes a lot of sense. I want my city government to be more powerful than my county government, my county more powerful than my state more powerful than my federal government. And I certainly want my federal government more powerful than whatever globalist assholes are trying to run this world.
And they're running it through, you know, these funds like Fidelity and Vanguard, BlackRock,
that, that,
Blackstone.
That very well could be the case. That very well could be
buying
the case.
Everything.
But every dollar you touch is in somehow corrupted, right? We are in, whether we like it or not, we are all, you know, recording, and you know, are you using the web to get your message out? Are you using radio waves? So you two are owned by BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street. Okay.
There's a question.
Is it corrupting
you? There's a question of degree.
That's exactly the question. The digital environment
itself is probably a more corrupting influence than whoever owns my local ISP.
I don't know.
And there's things I can't say on YouTube, so I don't say them on YouTube.
So then you are being controlled.
No, I say I can't say it on YouTube, and then I go someplace else.
Okay.
I say, well, yeah, we can't say this on YouTube. You can't say anything that you say on YouTube. You'll be
so
taken down.
So I've
in 10
never
minutes.
Done that.
But
I've have, always
your YouTube
said,
channel cannot.
I've lost my YouTube channel several
times. Right.
So that's the difference between you and I.
No. My YouTube channel has a different purpose than my investigative.
Oh, so then we're agreed then. So you have different purposes
I'm an
and
YouTube,
agendas
I'm
depending.
I'm a YouTube. I'm an astrologer.
Okay. Yeah.
And on Pacifica Radio.
So you two are crafting your dance with the devil, is what you're doing.
Did you follow that? Should I play this again? I'm tempted. What he said was, he makes a soliloquy about being an anti-globalist. Okay? And he wants his city stronger than his state, and his county stronger than his city, and his state stronger than this, and the federal government has got to be more powerful than the globalist assholes who are running us. And I say, yeah, the globalist assholes who are running us are the people who run these investment funds from which you are taking money. And then he turns it around and he says, ah, but I'm more pure than you. he tries to flip the script. Why is he more pure than me? Well, because I know that I can't go on YouTube and discuss viruses and vaccines. I'll lose my channel. So my YouTube channel is a therapy and astrology channel. But then I have every other venue. He says, well, I've never done that. I'm more pure, except that he also says he delivers his message appropriately to what room he's in. He can't keep it. He does not go from the beginning of the sentence to the end of the sentence without digging deeper into this fundamental hypocrisy of where his money comes from. And then he tries to make this absurd equivalency of me not discussing viruses and vaccines on YouTube. And then he says, see, I don't do that. You're just as controlled by BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, just like me, basically. Ha ha. Wait, no. What's that? Absolutely not. And I'm calling him out. We must remember this. The whole purpose of this discussion was me calling him out on the fact that money is flowing into ICANN through Fidelity and Vanguard. BlackRock does not have one of these funds. And this came out of, why is he playing this game with the virus issue? Why does it seem like he is just making sure that that issue is never taken seriously? He dodges, he bobs, he weaves, he declares Alex Zek, who appeared on the show, arbitrarily declares him wrong. He arbitrarily declares that the no virus issue does not ever win in court. Forget about Germany. He automatically pretends. No, he pretends to have never heard of Sam Bailey, of Mark Bailey. This was the first interview. And he pretends to never have heard of Christine Massey, who's Alex Zek, when he appeared on the show back in February, mentions Christine. And they put Christine's name on the show with Big Tree and Alex Zek in this conversation about the virus issue. And her name is on the screen and on the show. And then they take it down and he pretends to have never heard of her. And I'm trying to figure out why he's taking this. It's called posturing. It's posturing because it's stupid. When you say, well, the virus issue has never won, he calls it the terrain. That's completely ridiculous. The terrain. No. He said, the virus issue, the terrain can't win in court. The no virus issue can't win in court. And I say, well, it won. And he says, that doesn't matter. And then he says, he's against globalist assholes. whoever they are, and they say, yeah, they're these funds. Everybody knows, anybody paying attention knows that globalism means these global corporate interests that are not subject to government. And then he says, ah, well, but you're owned by them too. Well, he's admitting that he's owned by them. His case that I am is not a very good case. He's saying, in effect, well, I only put astrology readings on YouTube, therefore I'm controlled by the globalists. Look, I guess that would be good enough for some people. And what I am getting at here, the reason I'm doing this, and I understand I'm peeling this back very slowly. I'm not, this is not a shot from the hip. This is not a sniper job. This conversation has to be had slowly, and partly because he is so good at deflecting. I don't even think he's good at deflecting. He just does it all the time. He changes the topic. He tries to prove that I'm controlled by BlackRock because I put astrology readings on YouTube. Come on. And the point I'm making here is that this is what controlled opposition looks like. What you get for RFK Jr. taking money from Exxon to clean up the environment is somebody who will then go out and endorse. He'll do the exact opposite thing that he claimed to be doing for the past 7 or 8 years. He will take the exact opposite position. He'll go from the MMR is the worst thing ever to MMR saves lives in 1 minute. That is, to call it limited hangout is a joke, because it's just ridiculous. It's total betrayal of the cause that apparently he never cared that much about. And then Big Tree is endorsing him and saying it was a tremendous victory to get this pro-MMR anti-vaxxer into office. Now, I am concerned that given the nature of the mental environment right now, with old people addicted to their iPads, they won't come off their iPads. I have a cleaning assistant who's into this. She had to bring her kid, who's like an iPad kid. This kid was so, I try to talk to him. This is this cute little boy. I'm like asking him what he's doing and how, you know, and he's so completely addicted to his iPad. And old folks are getting like this, that this stuff is a little too nuanced. I hate that word, nuanced. It's a little too nuanced. No, this is not nuanced. When somebody who says, I'll take money from Exxon to clean up the environment, who also takes money from Fidelity and Vanguard to be anti-vax, then gets into power and as pro-vax, pro-MMR, that defeats the entire purpose of having putting him there. The victory of having an RFK Jr., assuming that he is who he was supposed to be, this great anti-vaxxer, would be that he would get into office and do the right thing. And anyone thinks that it's okay, that it's just fine to do the right thing, but it happens to be the exactly wrong thing, is not paying attention if they think that's okay. They're very confused. I hope you are not confused. I hope and I trust that you see what is going on here. If my words did come.